May the words of my mouth and the thoughts of our hearts be now and always acceptable in your sight, O Lord, our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. Last Sunday morning, the BBC's breakfast time was, as usual, co-presented by a man and a woman. And the man said, "Today is International Women's Day." And then, thinking of the clamour of phone calls and the cascade of countless emails that might be coming his way, he added defensively, "But I'm told there will be an International Men's Day." At which point his delightful female colleague chipped in. "Yes," she said, 364 of them. That's the spirit in which I offer you a text from this morning's inspiring gospel, which we've just heard. John says, the disciples were astonished that Jesus was speaking with a woman. But no one said, "What do you want?" or "Why are you speaking with her?" Now, it would be no bad thing if we were to begin by sharing the astonishment. Whenever astonishment occurs in the Gospels, it alerts us to something about Jesus that breaks out beyond the bounds of human expectation, of human convention, of human culture. And in the Gospel of John, astonishment is not actually all that common, but it does attach itself to Jesus saying something that is simply mind-boggling, as when he stops in his tracks the highly educated Nicodemus with a truth that his education would never have entertained. And it also attaches itself to Jesus' works or signs, which invariably point to the inseparability of Jesus and his Father in transcendent self-disclosure. But goodness gracious me, is Jesus speaking with a woman in that sort of league? If it is, then we in our turn cannot but be astonished. The writer of our gospel almost certainly knew and used the gospels of Matthew, Mark, and Luke. Those gospels are peppered with reports of encounters between Jesus and women, with narrative comments about how women were part of the travelling band of disciples, in some cases making a very necessary financial input to its sustainability, and with sayings that presume an audience of women as well as of men. Thus, consider the ravens addressed to the men, and consider the lilies addressed to the women. So, why did John want to assign astonishment to the disciples because Jesus was speaking with a woman? Forgive me for mentioning it, but long years ago, my research supervisor said to me when I began to work with him, "If you're going to make anything of the New Testament, you must learn to be surprised." In my own teaching work, I used to bang on in the same vein with my fellow students, "If you're going to make anything of the New Testament, you must learn to be surprised." And so today, may I say to you in your turn, as you reflect on the astonishment of the disciples, if you're going to make anything of the New Testament, you must learn to be surprised. You and I need to be surprised, to be astonished that the disciples of Jesus were astonished. And we can also permit ourselves a quiet smile. For there they were, happening upon a private conversational tête-à-tête between a man and a woman, and they respond with a very tactful silence. One might have said, "What do you want?" And another might have said, "Why are you speaking with her?" But no, silence. Nothing but silence. Anything that might have been said was left entirely unsaid. That's tact with a capital T. Of course, John wants these disciples to represent the men in his own Christian community, the community whose faith and life would have been exclusively guided by listening to his gospel. He knew that they would have brought themselves to the listening experience. Human beings, bundles of strengths and weaknesses, people who inherited the mindsets of their upbringing and the shared prejudices of the societies in which they had been born and grown. They were also people of faith. For we must imagine the reading and the listening in the setting of Christian worship, just like us today. But what sort of Christian community would it have been to which these listeners belonged? Well, though this may be a surprise, there's no sign in the Gospel of John as a whole of any interest in Gentiles. So the likelihood is that the Christian community assembled to listen and worship doesn't contain any. Only Jews and... well, could there be anyone else? That's what makes our story so absorbing, so powerful. Those biblically informed listeners to this story, as it was read in the worship of John's Christian community, would have classified it in their heads alongside two well-known biblical stories. First, there was the story in Genesis 24 of Eliezer, Abraham's servant's romance-inspired meeting with Isaac's future wife, Rebekah. And then in Genesis 29, there was the story of Jacob's romance-inspired meeting with his future wife, Rachel, at the well. And how stirring were the implications of that classification? Jesus, acting as the person given by God, moves to establish a marriage between his God and the community represented by, wait for it, this Samaritan woman. Indeed, this is nothing less than the story of the founding of the Christian community in Samaria. Now, Israel was used to talk of the God-Israel covenant relationship as a sort of marriage. But now it seems that same relationship is to be between God and the Samaritans. A relationship inaugurated by the astonishing action of Jesus. Surely not. Shock, horror. What a trauma this must have been for traditionalists. At a stroke, decades, indeed centuries, of Jewish stroke Samaritan aggravation were being dealt a death blow. The tortured history, the racist slurs about doubtful ethnicity, the theological deviance symbolized by two rival holy places on two opposing mountains, the religious aggravation, the political eruptions, the disgraceful destruction of the Samaritan temple by a Jewish high priest in the year AD, in the second century BC, the disgraceful destruction of the Samaritan temple by the Jewish high priest, that was consigned to the past. So was the grotting up of Jewish worship in the temple in the year 8 AD, when some Samaritans scattered human bones around the sacred site and thus completely wrecked the Passover celebrations. All left behind, and all because of a romantic meeting between the person whom God gave to the world and a woman. Those present for worship in John's community that morning, those who found themselves listening to this story being told, did not apparently include Gentiles, as we have seen. But for the story to have any bite, as it were, we must imagine that they certainly did include Samaritans. So within the bridge-building community of those who found in Jesus God's own gift to them, their memories, their mindsets, their inherited prejudices, their theological objections, all of these were put in the bin, as it were. Religion, which is and always has been responsible for giving opportunities for some of the more unsavory aspects, the more unsavory instincts of human beings to flourish, has here proved a catalyst for reconciliation, a prescription for the cure of inherited ills, a medicine for unexpectedly renewed health. True religion plainly swims against the tide. True religion evidently works against the grain. True religion heals and changes. There's more to this story even than that. It was not in the least surprising within the culture of the time that Jesus should have had a conversation with a woman, as the biblical precedents make clear. But John makes it seem like that. His disciples were astonished that he was speaking with a woman, it says. And he makes it seem like that because he has a theologically driven ulterior motive. He wants to engage his readers with the radical thought that a community can be represented by a woman and that Jesus and his God recognize her significance in those terms. Put another way, this story would not pack half the punch that it does if Jesus had been speaking with a man. So I hope you, like me, find this story inspiring. If we could be flies on the wall of the worshipping assembly of Christians for whom it was put together, we would notice in the assembled company Christian Jews and Christian Samaritans, Christian women and Christian men, all of equal value, none given priority over others. Samaritans as good as Jews, women as good as men, and all because of their indebtedness to the person who was God's gift to the world, for God so loved that he gave. And here's the final punchline. Any story about Jesus in the Gospels is meant to be or to become a story about the listening members of the believing and worshipping community. It tells how things were in order to indicate how things should be. If it's a drama, as this one is, the people involved are not just those who walk and talk on the stage, but also those who sit in the stalls, those who sit in the circle, and so on. And the intention is, therefore, that having seen the play, they should never be the same again. That's a thought for us, is it not? For us who, in our turn, listen to the story and get caught up in the drama of the remarkably daring, the astonishing, the romantic meeting at a well between a Jew and a Samaritan, a woman and a man. Amen.